And now WDEV FM and AM presents our two-hour public affairs program, Open Mic with Mike Smith. Important topics, topical guests, and your phone calls. And now here's the host of Open Mic, Mike Smith.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome. And thank you for joining us today. Very, very busy day. We have Mary Beersworth, who's the executive director of the Vermont Right to Life Committee, in our Radio Vermont studios this morning. And we'll talk to our very own Kaya Como at WDEV. 2016 is the 85th anniversary of this station, and throughout the year, I want to interview those that make this radio station operate smoothly, and smoothly it goes. But first, what I want to talk about is to, Tom, I'm going to open up the phone lines, and the question I want to ask is, do you think the Democratic Party is stacking the decks against Bernie Sanders? Would welcome your opinions, your comments, by calling our WDEV studios at 802-244-1777 or toll-free at 877-291-8255. And the reason I'm asking that question this morning at the start of this program is today's AP story that talks about Clinton confronts Sanders as polls tighten. This is an Associated Press story out of Waterloo, Iowa, and I'll just read a few paragraphs of it. Hillary Clinton has spent much of her presidential campaign looking past Democratic rival Bernie Sanders, focusing instead on Republicans and the November general election. No longer. 3 weeks before the leadoff Iowa caucuses, and with polls suggesting a tightening race, she now is confronting the Vermont senator more directly, attempting to undermine his liberal credentials on gun control, health care, and even Wall Street regulations that have been at the core of his insurgent campaign. This is quoting Clinton, "It's time for us to have the kind of spirited debate that you deserve us to have," Clinton told voters on Monday. "We do have differences." And the reason I'm bringing this up is because Bernie has complained that the playing field is not level. And that's what led me to this question. Do you think that the Democratic Party is stacking the decks against Bernie Sanders? Bernie Sanders has a beef with the Democratic Party. He's miffed at party officials for rigging the nomination process to favor Hillary Clinton. And as an example, what he uses are the number and the timing of the debates. And you know what? His complaint has some merit, because there's no doubt party stalwarts are behind Clinton. And all you have to do is look at what are called superdelegates. According to National Public Radio, Clinton is just crushing Sanders in these so-called superdelegates. And what these superdelegates are party leaders and elected officials that have a vote at the convention. And Clinton has amassed about 700 of these called superdelegates, and Clinton has amassed about 359 of them to Sanders' 8. And if you look at Vermont, top Democratic officials like Patrick Leahy, Governor Peter Shumlin, former Governor Madeline Kuhn, former Governor Howard Dean, have come out strongly in favor of Clinton. And even Representative Peter Welch has been noticeably noncommittal to a Sanders candidacy. So my question is, do you agree with Bernie? Are you miffed at Democratic Party officials for rigging the nomination process to favor Hillary Clinton? Do you think the Democratic Party is stacking the decks against Bernie Sanders? Give us a call at our WDEV studios. The number is 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. Let's go to Lynette in Greensboro, Bend. Lynette, you're on Open Mic. Good morning.
Hi, Mike. Where do we start? You think? Oh, my God. don't have all your debates on Saturday evening unless somebody said, Hillary, when do you think the worst time it would be to have a, when would the best time be for nobody to watch the debates?
So you think Saturday night before Christmas is not a good time?
Yeah, well, you think? But, oh, God, a whole bunch of us are going to be taking a webinar on how to use the phone banks and how to go over to New Hampshire in the beginning of February. And there's so much that's not being said. And I've talked to relatives and people who don't have a clue because they listen to, I don't know, commercial, regular old radio, and I don't know what. But, I sometimes think about civil war in this country just because things are so insane. And, boy, I mean, this is the only ray of sunshine we've had, as far as I'm concerned, in a long time. And I was, I liked Hillary the last time around. I happen to be an organic gardener, and when I found out that she worked for Monsanto, I promised myself right then and there that I would have nothing to do with her. Bernie and I are about, he's a little older than me, but we've both been believing the same things for most of our lives, and it just makes sense to me.
Hey, Lynette, thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
For your phone call. The question this morning, do you think the Democratic Party is stacking the decks against Bernie Sanders? And the reason I asked that question is because Clinton now is confronting Sanders as the polls tighten. And Bernie Sanders has been very critical of the Democratic Party. And as Lynette just said, he's been critical in this area that, party officials are rigging the nomination for Hillary. And he cites the numbers of debates, or six of them, and the timing of the debate. So my question is, is the Democratic Party rigging the nomination system to favor Hillary? And no doubt, as I just mentioned a little while ago, those party officials and those leaders and elected officials that have clear votes in what are called superdelegates, Clinton is crushing Bernie Sanders in that regard. Those are, by the source is National Public Radio, but Clinton has 359 out of the 700 what are called superdelegates to 8, and those are the party stalwarts that we're talking about in there. And so she does crush him there. Does he have a beef with the Democratic Party? Does his complaint have merit? I think it may have some merit. I mean, if you look at the number of debates and the timing of debates, he may have some merit here. Let's go to Cheryl in Plainfield and get her opinion. Good morning, Cheryl.
Is that me? It's Michelle.
Michelle, I'm
Hi.
Sorry.
I didn't know anything about the Democratic Party except for the DNC not giving him certain mailing lists. Mm-hmm. And I wrote to the DNC about that and said I'm not giving them any money until that's fixed. So I didn't even know about that, but what I have noticed is that, and I'm not a person who usually rails against the mainstream media, but I've noticed that the media sort of ignores him, except in Vermont. Like, I was in New York and I saw a news broadcast, and they had Bernie's picture, this was a while ago, Bernie's picture, Joe Biden, and Hillary, and they didn't even mention Bernie. His picture was right there, but they just talked about Hillary and Joe Biden, for example. I don't know. So that has been so puzzling to me that I feel like he has gotten much less coverage, just what he's saying, than he should. So I think Hillary's okay, but I just think Bernie would be great, but I certainly think he's getting a raw deal in terms of fairness.
Hey, thank you for your phone call. Let's go to Bob in Warren. Bob, hey. You're on open mic.
How are you?
Great, thank you.
Good. Bernie's getting a horribly raw deal. And I'm just amazed that, our Governor Shumlin, jumped over to the Clinton camp you know, over a year ago. He's been out campaigning for her all over the place. Leahy himself, you know, being on that side. And, you know, I'd like to hearken back to the Beach Boys. You know, be true to your school. Whatever, you know, what does it say to the kids of Vermont, right? It's like, yeah, well, we got Bernie. I think Bernie's great. He's fantastic. But, you know, when you have your own leaders, you know, shutting the door on the guy, at least Welsh doesn't say anything. I give him tons of credit for that. And I think Bernie, I don't know if he'll come out swinging or not yet, but, you know, he doesn't want to be the downfall of Hillary Clinton if she is the nomination. So you don't know, you know, I don't understand why he's not just beating her up on the Rahm Emanuel thing in Chicago. He won't say anything. You know, he won't take the gloves off. It drives you a little crazy.
Hey, Bob, I was real. You raise an interesting point, because I was really surprised about the Shumlin, I guess, defection is what you call it.
Yeah,
because
he's done with our state.
Because, you know, he was in a tight reelection race last time, and Sanders offered him a political hand. And I know that Sanders and the governor may not be close, but arguably, if it wasn't for Sanders, the governor may have lost that gubernatorial bid.
Right. And I believe that Mr. Shumlin is just looking for his next thing. You know, he's done with Vermont. He's going to look for his ambassadorship or something. And then Madeline Kunin. I like Madeline Kunin. I think it's great. But she will not say that Hillary Clinton did anything wrong. You know, she said, oh, she's changed her mind. Well, yeah, I mean, you know, you can say that about anybody. That's not an argument for why she should be a leader. I mean, it's really put Madeline Kunin in a bad light in my eyes. So I just think it's kind of amazing. Maybe not to the rest of the country, but here in Vermont, where I think, you know, we try to know each other, we try to do our own thing, they're saying the exact opposite of that, by the way they're campaigning for Hillary.
One more question, Bob, because yep. I enjoy your point of view here. The interesting thing to me is that Bernie hasn't come out swinging. Look, he's got an economic message which is resonating with voters, but he hasn't come out swinging against the party stalwarts that are basically, as you say, are rigging the system.
Yeah.
Why?
I think because, you know, if Hillary's the nomination, the nominee, he doesn't want to have, you know, give the other side all this fodder, right? We've seen it happen in the past, right, where they blamed, you know, Corvair guy, Nader, you know, for losing the Democratic election with Gore and stuff like that. So I think he's really careful. He's you know, I see where he's coming from. But, you know, you know, with Hillary, she just said, you know, I have faith in Rahm Emanuel. You know, I mean, if you just look at any of that stuff up in Chicago where the guy said he didn't watch the video, but he okayed a $5 million check to the family.
Yeah, the Chicago.
It's unbelievable.
Chicago's a mess, right?
It's a mess. It's a mess. So make Hillary come out. Make Hillary say something. But he doesn't. And, you know, because he knows that'll be a big thing. The Republicans will have enough to say about that. But I would like to see, and I think, you know, maybe it'll just play his way. Maybe he's smarter than all of us. And, you know, in the end, if he does get some momentum, you know, I'm there for the guy. I really hope he does well.
Hey, Bob, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Very informative phone call. Thank you for the phone call. We're asking the question this morning, and Tom, we got a few more minutes before we have to wrap this up, so if you want to call in now. Do you think the Democratic Party is stacking the decks against Bernie Sanders? And the reason I ask that question is because Hillary is now confronting Sanders as the polls tighten in both Iowa. Bernie is tightening up the polls in Iowa, and he is leading in New Hampshire. And one of the things that Bernie himself has said is that he has a complaint that party officials are rigging the system in favor of Hillary. And he cites as an example the number of debates and the timing of debates. So be very interested in your perspective. Do you think that party officials are rigging the nomination system to favor Hillary Clinton? Let's go to Fred in Newberry. Fred, you're on open mic. Good morning, Fred.
Oh, hi. Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, I don't know what the proof is, but, you know, I think Hillary is so sleazy that it wouldn't surprise me that she's trying to rig the election. Because she wants to sit beside George Washington. You know what I mean?
So, no, I actually don't know what you mean. What do you mean
she wants to sit beside George Washington. George Washington was the first president of the United States. She wants to be the first woman president.
Got it. Okay.
So that's the whole thing right there. She's so sleazy, I think. She wants to be the first woman president of the United States and doesn't give a damn about anything except being the first woman president of the United States.
Do you think there were six debates and one of them was, you know, Saturday before Christmas? Do you think that's a good indication of party officials trying to rig the nomination system?
Yeah, but yeah, I do. I mean, it's just, you know, it's just unbelievable. Unbelievable. Yeah, I do. That's the whole thing. Yeah, and you know, I think the primary is the most important election. And of course, I'm a Republican, but I vote Democrat in the primary election to try to eliminate the person that I don't like. Follow me? It's confusing, isn't it? But the primary is the most important election. If you don't win the primary, you're out, right?
You're too Machiavellian for me, pal.
Yeah, you're totally out. So I live in Vermont right now, and I'm really torn between Bernie Sanders Trump. I just don't know where I'm going to go. I'm going to vote for either Bernie Sanders or I'm going to vote for either Trump.
That's because
I live in Vermont.
Hey, Fred, thank you for your phone call. I appreciate it. Look, this is an interesting question, and maybe we'll bring it up later at some point in the week. You know, a lot of great phone calls, a lot of great comments this morning. But I want to move on, and coming up, Mary Beersworth, of the Executive Director of the Vermont Right to Life Committee. She'll be joining us in our studios in just a moment. This is Open Mic. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. It's my pleasure to welcome Mary Beersworth, who's the Executive Director of the Vermont Right to Life Committee. She's joining us in studio here at our Radio Vermont studios. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning, Mike. Thanks for having me on.
Who is Vermont Right to Life, and what are your objectives and goals?
Well, the Vermont Right to Life Committee started as Voice of the Unborn in 1971, with a very vigorous fight and educational campaign to protect unborn babies in the womb. I don't know if you're aware, but Vermont was one of the first states to legalize abortion throughout pregnancy in the country. It was before Roe versus Wade. So very early start pro-lifers understood immediately that not only were unborn babies at risk, but newborn babies with disabilities and the elderly at the end of their lives under threat of euthanasia. So it's always been a multi-pronged organization. Its essential goal, the soul of Vermont Right to Life, is to restore a respect for the sanctity of human life from the moment of conception until natural death.
There is a perception out there that you're part of the Catholic Church. Is that real or not real?
It is not real. Yeah, we're a separate entity, a separate organization. Do we work well with the Catholic Diocese and their Respect Life Office? Absolutely, as we do with every faith willing to step up to speak out for the unborn.
So how do you achieve?
And no faith. I mean, people can be an atheist or agnostic and still work for the Vermont Right to Life Committee. We put aside politics and faith and come together with the common belief that every human life has value.
How do you advocate to achieve your objectives here?
Oh, we're a busy bunch. A lot of volunteers. We have minimal staff. I'm a full-time employee, and I lobby for the organization as well. But we have volunteers all across the state, chapters in many counties, and they go to fairs. They have local activities. We speak out. We debate. There's any place we won't go and take our message, and we're going to stand our ground. And I think that a lot of people think that we were going to be gone by now. This is the 43rd anniversary of the Roe versus Wade and Doe v. Bolton U.S. Supreme Court decision that comes up on January 22nd. And we've been here a long time, and I have to say we're not going away. We only get larger. We only get stronger. The scientific evidence that we base our beliefs on is only getting more expansive. What we know about life in the womb, doctors performing surgery in utero, providing anesthesia to those babies when they do those surgeries, unlike what happens to a child in abortion. And we just keep standing and telling the truth. And one of my favorite things is is the bumper sticker question authority. So the pro-choice folks, which we sometimes refer to as pro-abortion, there is a difference between being pro-choice and pro-abortion. Now kids are starting to question authority. Well, they're the ones who are in authority, and they're taking a look for themselves, and we're seeing some excited young kids for life.
What's the difference between pro-choice and pro-abortion?
We have sort of a little ranking system. We can work with anyone who's pro-life, pro-life friendly, or pro-choice. But if you're pro-abortion, you want 100% abortion on demand throughout pregnancy, no parental notification, no reasonable requirements or restrictions on that practice, then we can't work with you.
There's a national organization. How are you organized in comparison to the national organization?
Very similarly, they have the National Right to Life Committee is probably the strongest lobbying force. They were named the top 10 lobbying forces on Capitol Hill. And they have chapters in every state. And so as we started out as Voice of the Unborn in 1971, we eventually consolidated and were awarded the chapter affiliate status of the National Right to Life Committee. And I, in fact, serve on their board of directors as well.
And in Vermont, how large is your organization?
Oh, with thousands and thousands of identified pro-life households. And we identify on, as I spoke before, on many issues. Maybe you're not with us on abortion, but you're with us because you're very concerned that doctor-prescribed suicide is going to leave some vulnerable elderly folks feeling like they have no choice but to ingest a lethal dose and end their lives, especially as, you know, healthcare dollars dry up.
Mary, how are you funded?
Oh, entirely by donations from Pro-Life Vermonters.
And what do you do as an executive director?
Just about everything.
Well, can you give me sort of a typical day?
A typical day?
Mary?
I go wherever I'm needed. I speak all over the state. I fundraise. I have to do a lot of fundraising to keep the organization going. I write a newsletter. I'm here today. I lobby, as I said before, which is very full time from January till May. We're very busy in the State House, just keeping a presence, we want to be the conscience of the State House. We're going to be there to remind them. We're not going away. We're not going home. So I do a lot of traveling. I do a lot of sort of cheerleading to keep our chapters revved up. We come up with new ideas. And in fact, we have several things happening right now. I'm glad you asked. We'll be running television commercials starting early next week, promoting adoption as an option and making sure people are aware of new adoption reforms that make things so much easier for a woman who has to consider relinquishing a child. She can, as we'll state in the ad, you can set up your adoption plan so that you have visits with your child, regular pictures, all kinds of things that don't make it that horrible separation and the mystery of never knowing what happened to your child. So we're going to promote that. We have a flyer project. This is going to land about the 23rd of January, 200,000. I just had to up it to 220,000. Flyers will be in nearly every newspaper in the state, promoting, from our point of view, the positive, powerful message that is that all life is human and life is sacred from the moment of conception. We'll have fetal development photos and very positive information for folks. One of the things we're pointing out in this flyer is that Vermont protects 215 plants and species under state and federal law. And on a scale of 1 to 10, the unborn baby isn't on it at all. So there's nothing.
We're speaking with Mary Beardworth, who's the executive director of the Vermont Right to Life Committee. If you want to call us and join our conversation, the number at our WDEV studios is 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. How did you become involved in this organization?
Well, I had my children in the late 70s, early 80s, and that's just as fetal development was becoming more of a routine thing to see. Life magazine, the big pictures coming out about life in the womb. I don't know if you remember that famous edition. It was very explosive. And, you know, you start to hear your baby's heartbeat, and then you hear about abortion. I still wasn't getting involved, but because I was pro-choice in college and all the rest of that. But I started to have great sympathy for that unborn child. And then when I started to hear about how women were suffering from their abortions and the emotional and physical distress they were in, and the fact that most of the time when you hear these stories from these women, which I've now got 40 years worth of stories, I know, and they say almost invariably, I felt I had no choice. So that's when I said, what are we doing this for? And then I got more and more involved and more and more involved. And what people need to understand, it's not that women are walking into a doctor's office with an unexpected pregnancy and being offered a lot of alternatives. The number one provider of abortions in the state of Vermont, the United States of America, and in the world is Planned Parenthood. They have a unique situation here in Vermont. It is Planned Parenthood of Northern New England. But they only have 4 clinics in Maine, 4 clinics in New Hampshire. They have 12 clinics in a state one-third the size of the population of the other states. They have an agenda. They have lobbyists in the state house. They support candidates at election time. And if you win their endorsement, they expect 100% compliance with their agenda. And their agenda is abortion legal throughout all 9 months of pregnancies, no restrictions, no regulations, no doctor required to perform, paid for 100% by the government.
Recently, there was a shooting, and I believe it was out west, where the shooter killed several people because he was claiming he was anti-Planned Parenthood or thereabouts. It was on some of their policies, Planned Parenthood. Several organizations, several people have targeted lawmakers and other organizations such as Right to Life as the promoter of feeding this shooter some of that information that made him, first of all, he was crazy, but let's get that off the table, but promoting some of the information that led him to these shootings. What do you say about that?
Well, you know, and I spoke to the media about this. It's just ridiculous to tie it. It's impossible, actually, to tie it to the people who are working to promote respect for human life from the very moment of conception until natural death. It is impossible to be pro-life and to do a violent act. This was a man who was no part of any of the regular pro-life folks who witnessed outside of that abortion clinic. In fact, the pro-life people have made friends with, in Colorado is my understanding, and they were immediately called, and some of the pro-life folks went over to make sure the folks they knew inside Planned Parenthood from all their years of being there were all right. So we've taken a random act. Yes, there's explosive information about Planned Parenthood. They are being charged and investigated with the sale of baby body parts. This is explosive. Men and women who have had something to do with abortion who were never told their baby had body parts. They don't tell those things, you know. But meantime, they were selling these baby parts. And it's upsetting and it's frustrating, but I don't think this guy had anything to do with the pro-life movement. He was just mentally unhinged. None of his family or friends say they ever heard him talking about abortion or religious values or anything.
We're speaking with Mary Beerworth, who's the executive director of the Vermont Right to Life Committee. If you wish to join our conversation, call us at our WDEV studios at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. Let's go to the phone lines and let's go to Bill in Barrie. Bill, you're on open mic with Mary Beerworth.
Good morning, Mike. Good morning, Mary. This is Bill Day. I know you from quite a ways back.
Yes, Bill. How are you? Oh,
great. My wife and I now are in our 80s, and I'm certainly glad that you said that all life is valuable, because we think so. I did want to make one point, probably ask this as a question, too. A lot of people who want children are going overseas to get their children, and sometimes these things work out pretty terribly. Things don't work right. There's all kinds of horror stories I've heard about that. And I'm just wondering if these Planned Parenthood clinics advise the expectant mothers that want abortions that they can, if a lot of people could adopt their children and be very, very happy. It'd be doing people a favor by taking the child and having the child and allowing that child to be adopted. I'm just wondering what Planned Parenthood says about that.
Well, thanks for your call, Bill. That's why we're feeling the same way you are, that it's really time now, as the abortion numbers are going down dramatically all across the country and here in Vermont. And I think it is partly due to the fact that more people have a sense of the value of human life and the serious nature of an abortion. So it's time to step up and start offering adoption as an option. You will not find parenting classes at Planned Parenthood. You're not going to find a lot of alternatives. What they do is abortions. I am confident that they say, do you know what your choices are? Adoption, keep your baby, or have an abortion. I am not confident that they have a robust conversation about the alternatives. And that's up to people who have been there. That's what my information is that they felt they had no choice. I hear that all the time. Circumstances can, especially on a college student, that's the highest number of abortions. That's the age group that is most likely to be susceptible to an abortion. And of course, you can't think of more pressure on a woman. Not only a boyfriend pressuring to get out from under paying for child support, but no services on campus so that she can raise her child. We're seriously lacking in support for women who need to make that decision. So ultimately, yeah, they also feel they have no choice.
What's your organization's position on stem cell research?
Well, we're all for stem cell research if it's adult stem cells, which are prevalent, easy to make, easy to get. You know, well, fat, for one thing. Americans have got plenty of extra fat they can give up. So we're all for that, and that's where the successes are. All those successes that you're hearing about, 75 amazing new cures at least, last time we checked, that's where the support goes. Embryonic stem cell research, absolutely opposed, and there has been little to no movement or any success stories with embryonic stem cells.
Let's switch to the other side of life. Bill had mentioned that he was 80 years mm-hmm. old. Physician-assisted suicide, what is your position on a physician-assisted suicide?
Oh, we lobbied hard against assisted suicide. We have since 2000. No, well, the first hearing was 1998. And so I've spent most of my career officially, I've been 20 years as the executive director, most of that time has been spent fighting assisted suicide. And it's appalling. And we do have a case of abuse, as we predicted would happen. A 91-year-old woman right here in the County of Washington was repeatedly pressured, repeatedly asked if she knows about the fact that she is entitled to ask for a lethal dose. And here's the kicker. She had no diagnosis of a terminal illness. She was just old.
So what the legislature has obviously passed.
They have passed it. It is legal. They passed a disaster of a bill, which everyone understands was a disaster.
And why was it a disaster?
Well, because it came so close. We fought all session. This was Governor Shumlin's second term. He made it his top four priorities was catering to an out-of-state organization called Compassion and Choices. They dumped $200,000 into the state, and the pressure was intense. And it was a supermajority in House and Senate, and yet still they couldn't get the bill passed until the wee hours of the final night of the session, where they took a 22-page bill, they ripped it in half, ripped it down to 11 pages, and pure political muscle pushed that through to the governor's desk. And then they woke up from their hangover and looked at it, and it's a mess. It doesn't provide any protections, no data collection. We know nothing. We know nothing about the people who have ingested those drugs, whether they died, whether they didn't die, whether they were left in worse condition, nothing. All we know is how many prescriptions have been written. That's it.
So, Mary, let me ask you this. I mean, I know that you oppose a physician-assisted suicide. What would make the bill better?
Repealing it. There's no way to make these things better. The forces that be on a person who, let's say, Mike, you're 80 like Bill who just called in, and you've got a terminal illness, or you don't have a terminal illness, but your healthcare dollars are drying up, and you're not well. And you hear your kids talking in the other room about how we're going to take care of dad and make sure that we get our kids to college, you know? If you wind up taking a lethal dose, is that a choice or is that a pressure? Mm-hmm. That's a pressure. And anyone listening to this, if they think they wouldn't be put under that kind of pressure or that their beloved mom and dad couldn't be put under that kind of pressure, they're wrong. I have a mother who is extremely against assisted suicide all her life and pro-life. But now she's got a little dementia. Now somebody could pressure her. Do you want to be a burden on your family? You really want to keep living? Don't you think you've lived long enough? These are things that are going to happen.
We're speaking with Mary Beersworth, who's the executive director of the Vermont Right to Life Committee. Would welcome your phone calls. Call us at our WDEV studios at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. I thought, and Mary, you're going to have to school me here a little bit, but I thought that the legislature had put in a mechanism where it would be reviewed again, physician-assisted suicide. That was not the case.
No, they actually, the bill was so bad, it's hard to describe. So they were actually going to repeal any of the provisions that were left in the bill. Okay, so they were supposed to, 2016, the minuscule little requirement that we know the number of prescriptions written would have gone away. So even though, even they knew that was bad, and so they didn't want to open the whole thing up for discussion. We did go for repeal, and we fell just few votes short of repealing the whole thing. But they did strip that provision out. So it's hard to understand, but they repealed a sunset of the minimal provisions left in the bill. They still need, and you, I believe I was listening when you had Commissioner of Health Harry Chen on, and he admitted the bill needs work. And it's going to be very difficult to understand how that bill works until we can get a fair shot at fixing it or repealing.
Is there any movement in the legislature to fix that bill?
I don't know. We're going to see what we can do. We're going to push. And I, when I say we, it isn't just Vermont Right to Life. In fact, we're just a small part of a very large coordinated organization that of sort of people who have drawn together out of concern. The Vermont Center for Independent Living, the Vermont Alliance for Ethical Healthcare, and others have led the fight to stop and prevent.
We're speaking with Mary Beardsworth, who's the executive director of the Vermont Right to Life Committee. If you wish to join the conversation, call us at our WDEV studios at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. Let's go to Dick in St. Albans. Dick, you're on open mic.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning to your guest.
Good morning, Dick.
We're dealing with the death culture. This thing that's going on here, and I mean it's a population control thing. Everywhere you turn here, either if you're young or if you're old, they're trying to kill you. And you know, you got to start looking at the people who promote this theory and keep promoting this agenda as to whether they're mentally stable themselves, because as you analyze their thought processes, their thought process is really is extremely negative. They have a tendency to believe that you're cancer to the earth here, and the human race here is just has to be just eliminated or controlled.
Well,
it's
you know,
amazing,
Dick. There is an organization promoting the fact that they believe that Vermont is overpopulated by 400,000 people, and they think a sustainable population here is 250,000. So it's interesting where we're at. Again, we're protecting 215 plants and animals, and the unborn has yet to get on the scale for any appreciative protections.
Let's go back to the phone lines, and Richard in Morrisville. Richard, you're on open mic.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My concern and my feeling is that the medical profession, death culture is a confession of failure by the medical profession, and I think that the idea of calling insurance health insurance is a scam, because it's not health insurance that is promoted. It is actually medical insurance. It has nothing to do with health. And so I just think that this idea of killing the old people and killing them in the womb is just like Dick just mentioned. You know, it's insane. It's insanity.
Yeah, I'd love to comment on that. And thanks for calling, Richard. I had a background in the natural foods business. My parents bought a natural food store called Mother Nature's in South Burlington. And that's where a part of our, you asked me where I became pro-life, but part of it was through the natural foods business, as we understood through naturopathic doctors that abortion was so harmful to your health and to your emotional and well-being. I mean, this is like Mother Earth news stuff that we were reading, and still we were understanding a lot about health, and my father would have totally agreed with you about medical insurance. He said we should actually pay our doctors only when they keep us well.
We'll take a short break, and we'll come back and speak more with Mary Beardsworth, who's the executive director of the Vermont Right to Life Committee. This is Open Mic.
Yeah.
Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. We're speaking with Mary Beardworth, who's the executive director of the Vermont Right to Life Committee. And we've been talking about various things that her organization does or believes in or advocates. One of the things, Mary, I want to turn to, what are your legislative priorities this year?
Well, we always, always are looking to pass a parental notification law. Now, most states have dealt with this constitutional under Roe v. Wade since 1976, and that's to notify one parent, at least, of a minor daughter before a surgical procedure or chemical abortion is performed on her. That has broad support in Vermont, and yet, and we actually did pass it in the House one year. We had broad support, cross political lines, Democrats, Republicans, Independents, and but it was stalled in the Senate. So we feel a great responsibility because we know of the teens that are trying to manage a secret abortion. There's probably nothing sadder than trying to keep that big a secret from your parents.
What will opponents say about that?
Well, ironically, Planned Parenthood, of course, is the 100% opponent. And they say that parents are already notified that they involve parents. So I don't know why they have a problem with passing a law that makes sure that's true for everybody.
And what else is on your legislative agenda?
We'll be looking at a lot of things. We certainly are going to be working to oppose what Planned Parenthood will be promoting on the abortion issues, which they are always looking to have more abortions paid for by the government. We pay for about a third of the abortions that are done in the state now. Dr. Dinosaur qualifies low-income women at an even higher rate, and your abortion can be covered. They would like that to be 100% coverage for every abortion throughout pregnancy, on and on. We also will be part of the coalition that is trying to introduce seven pieces of legislation to spotlight the problems with the current Act 39, which is the assisted suicide law, and much more. We'll have a lobby day on March 23rd, and we'll be seeing at what things are floating to the top, if any.
We're speaking with Mary Beardworth, who is the executive director of the Vermont Right to Life Committee. If you wish to join the conversation, call us at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. If you want to call, I would urge you to call now. We're starting to run out of time. So if you want to call us at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. Yesterday on Open Mic, we had a healthy debate about the press. Do you think you get a fair shake in the press?
Well, absolutely we did not in the early days. And we still are always referred to as anti-abortion, which is just inaccurate. As I've described to you, from the earliest days, we have been pro-life about the lives of the newborn, disabled newborn, and those at the end of their lives. So it's inaccurate. We've had to tolerate it. Anti-choice really goes over the top. That isn't true. But the young press corps is listening much more closely than the press was in the 80s and 90s at the height of the big fights over abortion. So I really feel we've gotten some great press coverage, both from 7 Days and from Vermont Digger. And they've very carefully listened, and their quotes have been accurate. So I'm not complaining.
You're living in a state that most polls say that most people at least identify themselves as pro-choice. Mm-hmm. That's the most prevalent view in this state. How do you overcome that?
And that's, we've seen that in our own polling. And we know where we have areas of agreement, and how we overcome that is to keep working on our areas of agreement. Here's the big area of agreement. If we can get the number of abortions to zero because we keep promoting life, then anyone who disagrees with us is rightly described as pro-abortion. We should be able to agree that abortion is this really sad day. It's got to be the saddest day in a woman's life. It's certainly a tragedy for her unborn child who's not going to see the light of day and may include some excruciating pain if we're talking after 20 weeks. So let's talk about what we agree on. And I need people to understand out there in this audience that there are 12 Planned Parenthood clinics in Vermont. There are 11 crisis pregnancy centers who offer free help raised by pro-life money, all funded by pro-lifers. Planned Parenthood gets $1.8 million in state and federal funds annually, but 11 centers have managed to survive and offer women alternatives who are just being funded by pro-life dollars. They have ultrasound technology in some of the clinics, and it's exciting, and they offer parenting classes, and they make sure they see you all the way through.
Is there any exception in your organization dealing with abortion, for example, mother's life in danger?
The National Right to Life Committee and the Vermont Right to Life Committee have always made an exception for the mother's life. And thankfully, that's just really not a non-existent problem at this point. A doctor has two patients, a good obstetrician has two patients, and trouble that arises in a pregnancy that threatens a woman's life can arise, tends to be at the end of pregnancy, and the baby can be delivered and take its chances in the nursery. We're now seeing babies survive at like a pound and at some early 22, 23 weeks successfully.
Is there any other exceptions that your organization would support?
No.
Okay. What's the greatest myth about your organization?
I guess it's been perpetrated by that description of us as anti-choice, anti-abortion, when we really are pro-life and we're willing to work and be open and see where we can agree and find that movement. Our guest speaker this weekend for our Rally for Life, I'd love to get to this because she's one of our kind of secret weapons. This is a young gal from Louisiana, but she's getting her master's degree at Boston College, and she is coming to Vermont and speaking to our young people. And she knows how. This girl's skilled. She's spoken with 7,000 kids at training camps, pro-life training camps in Louisiana. And she knows how to reach out with the positive message of life. And she's going to spend her next 3 years giving us some time and meeting with students anywhere in the state. So we're going to showcase her Saturday at the State House. She'll be our guest speaker. She is 26 years old. Her name is Sarah Mary Toss. And parents and pro-life folks will get a chance to meet her. And that's how we're going to begin to change our perception. We're going to just keep going out there, telling people who we are, what we do, and that it's positive.
How do you endorse candidates? Because I've noticed that you've endorsed candidates that don't sort of toe the same line, that have the same positions across the board that you do. How do you endorse candidates?
Well, we interview candidates and we try to find, get voting records. We keep a very extensive database of where candidates tend to run over and over again. They disappear for 10 years and bam, they're back. So we've got them on file. And we have discussions with them. They don't have to agree with us 100%. We'd like some support for our legislative agenda. So parental notification, opposition to late-term abortions, certainly support for what was called the Bennington Babies Bill that would at least... It accepts abortion, but if a man is intent on a crime against you because he doesn't want you carrying his baby to term and paying for child support, he can do violence to that woman and really walk away scot-free for the violence done to that baby, including killing the child. So unlike 38 other states where they have moved because homicide is becoming a leading cause of death among pregnant women. I mean, there's violence against women who say, I'm having this baby. And so who opposes it? Planned Parenthood. But anyway, we'd be looking for something like that. We'd be looking for opposition to assisted suicide. And we don't necessarily endorse a candidate who is who's not with us 100%. We have a preferable than the opponent category.
One more time, your Rally for Life
Rally
is when?
Rally for Life. It's this Saturday, January 16th. We kick off behind City Hall, march through the streets, and then we take it indoors in the well of the house, and we will be featuring Sarah Mary Toss, who is our new outreach director for pro-life kids in Vermont.
Thank you, Mary. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
And just for the radio audience, I want you to know that I have invited Planned Parenthood to be on Open Mic as well. So coming up, we'll check in with our friends at Talk Media News, and then we'll have a conversation with Kaya Como, our person of the week here at WDEV that we'll be interviewing during the 85th year that this radio station has been on the air. And of course, if you miss any of this program, you can always go to our website at WDEVradio.com and listen to the podcast. This is Open Mic on WDEV AM 550, broadcasting from Waterbury, Vermont, 96.1 FM from Warren, 96.5 FM from Barrie, and 101.9 FM from Island Pond. And as I said, we stream on the World Wide Web at WDEVradio.com. This is Open Mic. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. At this time of the day, we go to our colleagues at Talk Media News. And today we're going to Luke Vargas down at the UN. Good morning, Luke. How are you?
Hey, good morning. I'm doing great. Thank you.
Hey, I'm going to take you off topic for a minute, but
please.
I started out
maybe.
I started out the morning talking about an Associated Press story where Clinton confronts Sanders as polls tighten, and talked about a little bit that Hillary is starting to feel some heat in Iowa with Bernie Sanders, and also that he leads in New Hampshire, so she's taking it to task on gun control, health care, and even some Wall Street regulations. And one of the things that Bernie's had a beef about the last, Bernie Sanders had a beef about the last sort of, I guess, maybe a month or so, is that he has a beef with the Democratic Party, and he sort of thinks that the Democratic Party is rigging the nomination in favor of Hillary. And he uses as an example the number and timing of the debates, for example, the Saturday night before Christmas as one of the debates. What's your take on what's going on here?
Well, I am sympathetic to his claims about the DNC. Their goals don't seem to be the same as the RNC. I was just looking at the RNC debate schedule, and there is a very close correlation between the times of the week when most people are looking to tune in to political programming and when these debates are timed. There's a big correlation between where the debates are hosted and where people are going to be voting. We haven't seen a New Hampshire GOP debate just yet because New Hampshire is not going to vote just yet. That's going to wait until a few days before the primary. We have not seen an Iowa New Hampshire Republican debate because Iowa doesn't vote until the beginning of next month. Republicans have put those contests, televised events, right before the voting begins. The Democrats held their, that Saturday debate, the one, you're sort of alluding to, one of the sort of crazy timing of these events, was back in December. I don't think you can make a claim that the DNC's top priority is to get as many eyeballs as possible on their candidates. And I think that naturally opens the party up to skepticism and criticism.
Tonight is the State of the Union address. Any prelude as to what he will be talking about or what he will be saying?
Officially, very little prelude compared to, I'm not the D.C. guy, but even I would get the emails from the White House and various, cabinet secretaries to hold background briefings with the media about legislation the president was going to talk about in his speech. There's been none of that sort of preparatory media outreach.
Luke, I think we may have lost you. Are you there? Well, we'll try to get Luke Vargas back to us to discuss the State of the Union speech. And Tom, can you see if he calls back and see what we can do to get him back? We seem to have lost him, and he's probably speaking right now and doesn't realize that we've lost him.
Yes, for once you can't blame it on me because I wasn't even in the room. I was getting coffee and then I heard silence, which is always bad.
What we've been talking with Luke about is something that we started out the program with, and that is, does Sanders have a real good beef about the Democratic Party? He's miffed at party officials for rigging the nomination system to favor Hillary Clinton. And what we were talking about with Luke is the number and timing of the debates. The number of debates have been very limited, and the timing of the debates have been real strange. For example, the last debate was Saturday night before Christmas. And of course, what that usually does is help the front runner. So the question that I started out the show with, does Sanders' beef have merit? And I thought it did. It has some merit in terms of what he's doing. And what surprises me about the response that Sanders has is he hasn't had, look, his message of economic disparity between the haves and the have-nots in America is as powerful as it was at the turn of the 20th century when Roosevelt used it, and actually Taft used it at the turn of the 20th century. He talks with much passion about the need for this political revolution, which itself implies that the political elites in both parties are part of the problem and not part of the solution. But what happens is when he talks about the Democratic Party's nomination process, he does it with much less bluntness than he does with his economic message. By the way, his economic message resonated long before, including members of his own party, even knew that was a top issue. So that's what I was talking to Luke about in terms of Sanders, it seems to me, needs to be more aggressive in going after those that are prohibiting him from getting the same, that prohibited him from taking on what is the presumptive Democratic candidate in Hillary Clinton. And Luke, we have you back. I want to sort of...
Sorry about that. I don't know where I dropped off. So you'll have to jog me up to speed.
Well, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to ask you what's on your agenda, because I took most of your time talking about stuff that was of interest to me. What's on your agenda to talk about today?
One foreign development I think we need to discuss, and I'm really surprised hasn't made it into the headlines, which is that yesterday the Iranian government came forward and said they have basically completed the last item on their checklist in order to be in full compliance with last year's nuclear deal. The actual development that they're claiming is that they've taken the heavy water reactor in Arak, and this is one of the most sensitive sites within the Iranian past nuclear supply chain, a site that they held out as a huge bargaining chip in negotiations for years. You know, they had actually locked down a ton of that nuclear deal quite a while ago, but exactly what to do with this site remained in question. They eventually agreed to fill up the heavy water reactor with cement, and then the international community would come in and help convert the facility into sort of a state-of-the-art nuclear research center. So this claim that they filled it up with cement or are almost finished doing that is very meaningful. It represents the finish line of this nuclear deal, and we could see, as a result, as soon as this is confirmed, full implementation of this deal and the suspension, the end of UN sanctions on Iran within weeks now. So we really are at a moment in history that Iran's leaders have wanted to see for some time now.
Hey, Luke, as always, thank you so much. Your comments and opinions are really appreciated and informative. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. And sorry about the interruption. I'll get on a better connection next time, I promise.
Well, no problem, because you have connected us from all over the world. So I appreciate your time. That's Luke Vargas from Talk Media News. Up next, Kaya Como from our own WDEV. This is Open Mic. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. It's my pleasure to have in our Radio Vermont studios, well, it's actually her studio too, that she does many of her broadcasts from, is Kaya Como at WDEV. 2016 will be the 85th anniversary of the station, and throughout the year, I want to interview those that make this station operate smoothly and behind the scenes.
So you've started with me. Oh, good grief.
You said you're nervous. Why?
I am. Because this is not part of the job duties, being interviewed.
Well, let's start.
And I'm a shy person.
Yeah. I've only been here a short time, but I know that is the truth. If you wish to join our conversation, give us a call at our WDEV studios at 802-244-1777 or toll-free at 877-291-8255. So how did you get here? How did you get to this radio station?
Oh, how did I get to this radio station? Well, it's the only radio station I've ever worked at. I started right after college. I went to Champlain College for a couple of years. That was the deal I struck with my parents. One of you kids are going to go to college. So I said, I'll do the time. I'll go 2 years to Champlain. Really didn't know what I wanted to do when I grew up. Still really don't know. So I took a business course. Got my associate's degree in business management. And I wound up here sort of at the suggestion of a friend of mine. You know, she knew I was looking for work, and she suggested this place, and here I am many, many years later.
So let's back it up a little bit. Where were you? Where'd you come from?
I'm actually originally from the shoreline of Connecticut. Was born in Connecticut and spent the first 15 years there. And then my father retired, sort of semi-retired, and he, after a few years, took a job here in Waterbury as a town manager. He came up in 77, and then my mother and I came up a few months later in, like, January of 78. So I went to a couple of years at Harwood Union High School, then Champlain College, and just stayed in Waterbury. It's grown on me after all these years.
And how long have you been at the radio station?
Since 1982.
You're really worried I'm going to drop bomb here, aren't you?
I am. No, since 1982, May of 82. So what's that, 30? Oh, gosh, it'll be 34 years, right?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's good.
I was just a young thing when I started. Young and impressionable.
And you still are, right?
Yes. Yeah.
What do you do here?
Like anything here, if you've been here long enough, if you've been here a short time, we all do everything. My main job title, though, is traffic director. Commercials. I work with the production person, and we make sure commercials get on the air. If you ask me, what does traffic mean? Salespeople go out, sell the time to the clients. They sell them a flight of advertising, and they bring back part of the order to me, part of the order to the production person. The production person gets the commercials ready, make sure it's ready to go on the air. I schedule the time, and I make sure that the commercials fall where they should fall. So I'm working primarily, I would say I work as an assistant to the sales department.
Now, I Googled you, and here's what I found out.
Oh, good gosh.
No, I'm just kidding.
If you Googled me, all you got were soldiers killed in action or where the Kia dealership is.
Yeah, but I've found other sources. Just kidding. What other jobs have you had here at WDEV?
Oh, here? I started as the copywriter. I started as a copywriter when I was 19. I had no idea what that meant. Ken Squire pulled me aside one day and said I had the most bastardized Southern New England accent he had ever heard. And then he would work with me. Oh, he worked with me for a long time to get me to pronounce words correctly.
Like what?
100. I say 100. I live off of Route 100.
Oh, okay.
And no, it's not 100. It's 100. So we would work on things like that.
And I don't know what a Southern New England accent.
A bastardized Southern New England accent? I don't know either, but apparently I have one.
And you left for a little while, but you came back.
Oh, good gosh. Yeah, I left for 6 weeks, probably about 14 years ago. I wanted to do something different. You know, it was probably a midlife crisis at 40. I wanted to do something a little different. I had found something that I thought would work at Fletcher Allen Healthcare. That lasted about 6 weeks.
Yeah. We're speaking with Kaya Como, and of course you know her from her time here at WDEV. If you want to call in, if you have a comment, if you want to join the conversation, the number is 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. You hear her every day with the party calendar. If you have any questions, give us a call. Be interested in the questions that you have. What sort of the learning experience that you've had here at WDEV, you've been here for a while.
Yeah, 34 years.
What have you learned?
Oh, my gosh, a little bit of everything. And I was just thinking that you said, what else have you done here? And as I said, you know, if you work for a small independent company, you often get asked to do other things, such as, and we were talking about this earlier, the production person and I, it was our job for a long time when we had the big old boiler that we would have to go down every day and make sure the door to the boiler was shut and make sure the boiler was filled with water. I'm the one that always seems to get the job of plunging toilets and changing the filters in the air conditioner. So we do, you know, we do a little bit of everything. So
I thought you were going to say coal, that you had put coal.
No, I didn't. I did not ever have to do coal. Although with Ken Squire, that would not surprise me. And what have I learned? Oh, my gosh, so much. It's unbelievable.
Let's go to the phone lines. Let's go to Jerry in Montpelier. Jerry, you're on Open Mic with Kaya Como. Good morning.
Good morning, Jesus, Jerry.
What a pleasure. What a pleasure.
How are you?
Oh, yeah. I'm curious. I mean, this is great. I'm going to just give you a bunch of questions, then
boy.
I'm going to hang up and listen to the answer, okay?
Okay. Do I have to write these down?
Well, no, I think you can remember.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, I'm going to start off with, and I think you can remember them. Number one is, why is there a cardboard cutout of you but not Ken, John, Eric, or Cheryl?
Okay.
Okay, now you can remember that
I one. Can remember that one. Easy
okay.
answer.
Okay, do you feel you should be making more than minimum wage after your length of time at the station?
Okay.
Okay, now, considering you seem to be the go-to gal, i.e., you do the dumpster shows,
yeah.
the trading post, the party calendar, you run the office holiday parties, all of this, and you run the office, too. I mean, that's amazing, and that goes back to the minimum wage thing. And are you in the process of buying DEV, the Superstation of Vermont, with your mom and husband John,
okay.
while keeping your Harleys? You got to keep your bike to
oh,
do
I
that.
Oh, I got to keep the bikes, don't I? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it can't really cost that much to buy DEV.
Hold off on the bikes because I got to use the bikes
oh,
later.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
All right. Now, my last question is, do you feel that you and the postman could raise more turkeys for, you know, during the Thanksgiving time if you threw them out of a helicopter like KRP? It seemed to work for them. All right.
Thanks.
Okay.
Now, all kidding aside.
Okay.
Seriously. Every time I call there, I get you or Cheryl.
Yes.
You are the most fantastic people, the most helpful people. You seem to be the women behind the men.
Mm-hmm.
Like in politics, you know, there's always a... Well, we won't go with Hillary
right,
Hill right now, but, you know. And you definitely run the show down there. I know John, I know the other guys. Don't ever say that. This is our secret. But
okay.
You definitely do run the show, and I think you ought to buy the station.
Oh, gee, thanks. Okay.
Thanks, Jerry. So answer his question.
Okay, Cardboard Kaya. Where did Cardboard Kaya come from? Cardboard Kaya came from the fact that I don't like to do remotes or appearances. Plus, I've got other things going on in the office. I think people think that this is what I do, the party calendar. I sit around. Drink tea. Well, here's my teacup. And we talk about the party calendar as only I can. But no, I don't. There's a lot more going on in the office than people realize. It's not just a 9-to-5 job. I think like any of us here, you know, if something happens that's news breaking, we all pitch in. So it's not just a 9-to-5 job every day. And consequently, because a lot of times I'm not able to, or I just darn refuse to do certain things like appearances at remotes, the idea was to have a Cardboard Kaya, and she would make the personal appearances. And I think my first appearance was at the farm show in Burlington with Mark Johnson, which was maybe, what, 5-6 years ago. And Mark Johnson sort of indicated that having cardboard cutout Kaya there was actually quite distracting because he was trying to interview Governor Shumlin, and a couple of older gentlemen were more intrigued with cardboard Kaya than they were with Governor Shumlin.
let's roll down through his questions because we've got people on the phone.
Making minimum wage, oh my gosh, yes. Of course that would be nice to make more than minimum wage. I actually do make a little more than minimum wage. Dump show by WDEV, oh good grief. No, let's leave that to Ken Squire. Okay. And the postman and the turkeys... I don't want to clean up turkeys off of Main Street here in the village of Waterbury. I think we do quite well. I think our 200 turkeys is okay.
And what the caller was referring to, of course, there's this WKRP show where they had this promotion where they threw turkeys out of a helicopter.
Because they thought, for the love of God, turkeys could fly. And no, they really can't.
Let's go to Doug in Randolph. Doug, you're on open mic.
This is a request from Kaya, for Kaya, to do the bonus edition on Saturdays more often.
You people like me doing the bonus edition of the Trading Post, don't you? Oh, but
you're fantastic.
Oh, why, thank you. That's very sweet of you. Unfortunately, I don't understand three quarters of what folks are selling, I'm selling. And tire sizes and gun calibers, that just has me completely baffled. But thank you very much.
Well, you have my vote for it.
Why, thank you. I appreciate that.
What is the wackiest thing that you can think of that has happened here at the station?
You know, I was thinking about that earlier, and I don't know as if there's any one thing or any one thing is terribly more wacky than the other, but I think people would be amazed at the lunchroom conversation. And also, and yeah, I see Tom and you have just slid off the chair. The things that we talk about, and I don't know if that comes from age and you're just more comfortable talking about things, but I know occasionally we embarrass the young folks like Tom McLeod and a couple of our sales reps. But then it always amazes me that as soon as the lunch table conversation is done, we all go back to our desks, we all go on the air, we flip the microphones on, and it's back to being professional and no swearing and no crude talk or anything. And that always amazes me.
There's crude talk at the lunchroom?
It just maybe just a little. Tommy, you agree? No? Yes?
I generally prefer to go to counseling after some of the time down at the... No, it's fun. It's fun, sincere group, and you know where you stand.
Yeah, that's true. You do know where you stand. And I think the other one I was thinking about recently was, and I don't for the life of me remember who it is, but it just struck me as very odd. I'm going to say it was probably 15, 20 years ago. We had a politician in here. I don't know if he was running for president, or it wasn't governor, maybe it was Senate, I don't know, but it was a politician that came in, and he came in with a group of men in black. They all had their suits on, black ties, black jackets, black trousers. They all wore headsets. They had the black glasses on, and they scouted the studio out. And I thought, this is Vermont. This is DEV. What is going on here? But he came in. They swept him in, swept him out. They swept through the building. And I'm like, dude, Douglas, Snelling, Howard Dean, they all just breeze in here. And how are you doing? And this guy was not a Vermonter. I just found that just sort of blew my mind.
We're speaking with Kaya Como, who does a lot of things around here and is the traffic manager. And also, you hear her on the air. We're doing occasional interviews with people here at WDEV because it's the 85th year that this station has been on the air. It's 2016 now, and 85 years ago, WDEV started. If you wish to join our conversation, the number is 802-244-1777 or toll-free at 877-291-8255. We'll take more of your phone calls when we return. This is Open Mic. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith, and of course you hear that twice a day, and the person who is behind the microphone when that plays is Kaya Como. We're interviewing Kaya Como, and you know, it's interesting to watch her a little bit nervous.
I am nervous, yes, because I'm used to just sort of free form. You know, that's when I come in the morning and I go up to one of our sister stations with Quorum. It's just sort of free form. We don't have anything planned that we're talking about. So this, ooh, questions, okay.
And it's about you, so it's...
I know, I don't like that at all. Not one bit.
If you wish to join our conversation, the number is 802-244-1777 or toll-free at 877-291-8255. Welcome your phone calls if you wish to join the conversation. Over the years, there's been plenty of people you had mentioned... This person, I assume, with the Secret Service that was coming through.
Yeah. I don't even remember who that was, to be honest with you.
It must have been a lasting impression.
Yeah.
But what, at all these years, are there a few people that have come through the studio that you say, boy, that's pretty cool?
Well, I think, well... The one that impresses me right now is Jasper. I think because he's so young. And I met Jasper when he was about 10. We were working on, he was doing the coat drive for the Red Sox Kids for Kid Nation. So Ken got involved in that, and Jasper and I and a couple of the other women in the office were sort of working on that. And for a young man, he's got it going on. He knows what's going on. And we laugh, but I sort of wonder to myself if I'm serious when I laugh. I sort of say, yeah, someday I'm going to be working for Jasper Goodman. Oh, boy. Jasper's going to be my next boss. I would not be surprised to see him, you know, national television someday. I really wouldn't.
Kaya, this just popped in my head, but has there been anything that you've been on the air that went sort of to that you said, this is the blooper reel?
Nothing that I want to admit to. Yeah, nothing that I want to admit to. Of course, Jack Donovan could probably tell you things, but he's not here right now, so thank you.
Okay, we'll move on then. This just popped in my head as well. Over the years, there's been a lot of changes.
Yeah, there have been. A lot of people have come through the doors.
And that is something I just wanted to just briefly talk about. What have you seen change, and what sort of has impressed you about what has changed over the years?
What has changed? I don't know. You look around the studio and it would be easier to ask what has not changed. Equipment and technology here. It amazes me that Tom can sit over there with all the equipment and make everything work. And it's like poof magic. I forgot your question now. I'm sorry.
Let's move on.
Okay.
The question was, the changes over the year, anything sort of strike you? You talked about the technology and the changes in the technology. Anything else that has changed that it could be for the good, it could be for surprising? What has changed over the years that sort of strikes you?
I don't know. I guess I'm finding it hard to answer because, you know, technology changes. Even my own job has changed so much. Now I have a computer on my desk. And I think, how did I do that before the computer? How did I start here writing copy without a computer with my little Smith Corona?
So let me ask you this, that it sort of comes at it in a different way.
Yeah.
Why do you enjoy working here?
Oh, I think about this a lot. I like what I do. I really do like what I do. I like pushing the paper that the sales reps have sent me. And I really like the people I work with. I think it's a great group of people. There have been people that, you know, over the years that I've gotten along really well with and, you know, sort of pals outside of the station. There are other people that I've clashed with. But I really like the group of people I work with. I really do. Everybody seems really dedicated to the cause. I think everybody here is dedicated to what DEV does what they stand for. And I like that. It's a nice group of people to be with.
What does DEV do, and what does it stand for?
It's the news, you know. Boy, if we could have another hurricane right now, that would be great, you know? Tom is shaking his head. But I think that's when we're the strongest. And as a group, when we all sort of pull together in that little bit of when there's a storm brewing, if you will.
You're here a lot. Mm-hmm. And every time I'm here, you're here. So.
My office hours are 7:30 to 4:30. I usually leave the house. I try to leave the house, and I live 3 miles up the road. I leave the house at 7 so that I don't get behind the school buses. And then I'm here until whenever the job is done. Because I don't have that job that, if all the orders aren't put in today, they'll be there tomorrow. I work by the clock. There's always a clock, and I'm always looking at the clock. I have to get things out.
Must be a radio mind, because the clock is everything.
It is everything. And like if logs are not ready, which I've done this a few times, if I have forgotten to do logs, I'll get a phone call from either Bob Welch at midnight, or I'll get a phone call from John Noyes at 4 in the morning. Where are things? Oh, okay. I left early and I completely forgot to do them. So, yeah, I can leave when the job is done.
What do you do for recreation?
I feel like sometimes I don't. What do I do for recreation? I sort of like to be alone, actually. So they're all solitary things. I love gardening in the summer. And actually, probably in about a month, I'm going to get the catalogs out and start looking at gardening books and gardening magazines and start planning my next garden. I'm knitting right now. I love to knit in the winter. I'm also working on genealogy at the moment. So I'm hunkered down with my laptop during the evening hours looking at trying to find ancestors. And of course the bike. You and I have talked about that before. I have the bike. I wish the weather was more conducive to riding more often in Vermont.
And we're talking about the motorcycle.
Motorcycle, yeah, because I'm not a hardcore rider. And I wish my husband was sort of physically capable of riding a little longer too. So I don't get on my bike as much as I'd like.
I'd be curious, what's your favorite sort of route with the bike in Vermont?
East to west routes for the scenery.
Okay.
And I think they're a little more twisty, although I've not gone through the notch yet.
Why?
I'm afraid. Yeah, I know. I'm afraid.
We're speaking with Kaya Como, who's does everything here at WDEV, and this is part of the...
You're too kind.
85th anniversary of WDEV. Just trying to introduce people who you know, who you hear every day, but trying to get a little bit more up close and personal with these people at WDEV. And Kaya was kind enough to come on and talk about this. If you wish to join our...
I'm the only one that would bite. Okay? That's it.
If you wish to join the conversation, the number is 802-244-1777. Or toll free at 877-291-8255. We talked about why you like working here. Talked about a little bit about the fact that you like riding the motorcycle for recreation. What do you like about the area here?
Oh, I love that small town feel. I really do. I grew up in a very small town in Connecticut. I think when we left in 78, there was probably about 2,000 people. And I don't think there's many more now in that area. I just love the small town feel. I've always liked that about Waterbury. We used to have Maxie Irish was owned Maxie's Market. He was a meat cutter, had a convenience store. A lot of folks know Maxie. And I just liked being able to go in there at the end of the day and have Maxie know who I was. And I could say to him, what am I having for dinner tonight? I got something for you. And he'd, you know, cut it, and there you go. And I thought, where else are you going to get that? You're not going to get it anywhere else. And where else can you work that the governor walks in on a regular basis and knows your name? You know? Yes. And I love the one that Phil Scott had birthday cake with me one time. Ooh, how many folks can say Lieutenant Governor had birthday cake with you? I love that. I just think that's so cool.
We're speaking with Kaya Como, who obviously works here at WDEV. We're doing this because it's the 85th anniversary of WDEV. If you have any questions or comments, or you just want to join the conversation, this has been a fun conversation. Call us at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. You won the lottery. If you won the $1.4 billion lottery, what would you do?
Well, I know what my husband would do. You know, he'd say I'm retiring and, we're going to build the biggest and best of everything. Honestly, I'd keep working. I enjoy.
Everybody says that.
What, that they'd keep working?
And
really?
They never do.
I'd at least get a part-time job pumping gas somewhere. Yeah, I would. I might not work full time, but
it's,
you know,
$1.4 billion.
But how much of that $1.4 billion am I going to really get?
Well, let's take half of it.
Okay, let's take half.
So it's only $700.
Okay, and then they tax how much?
Well, that's what I said. You know, Well, you would probably take it in an annuity, or you would take it over.
I just want the lump sum?
Yeah, you'd probably only take half.
Okay.
Okay. So half is $700 million.
Okay, I might build a pool and hire that pool boy that I've always wanted, but no, I'd keep working.
Let's go to the phone line. Let's go to Lori in Waitsville. Lori, you're on open mic.
Hi.
Hi.
Good morning.
Hi, good morning. I heard you talking about the lottery winnings. They suggest to not quit the job right away.
See,
but
I knew.
They just leave it not right away.
Right. And we wouldn't tell relatives right away, correct?
Right,
that we're not
Facebook,
supposed to
yeah,
do
don't
that.
Don't paste it on Facebook.
I wouldn't tell any relatives.
Oh, don't tell it on the radio.
Yeah, exactly. No, I would not do that either.
No, we wouldn't. So, Kaya, you were mentioning about, you know, being the strong during the hurricane, during the storm.
Yep.
So we don't wish anymore.
Right.
So. But at any rate, I had you on a little transistor, very, like a 4-inch little transistor radio during that time.
Oh, really?
I think I wrote to you once, but publicly I just wanted to say how much your voice and the others from WDEV during that time was such a guiding light for me.
Oh, good.
And just having that radio nearby where, well, we're cleaning up, going through what we were going through. And just wanted to say that you are right. You are very strong during the storm.
Oh, good. Thank you. And
you did come through just that way. Just as you say, you did come through that way for me.
Well, good. Thank you. We appreciate that, and glad that we could, you know, be in it together, so to speak, and get through it together. And I think too that on this end of it, I think we get as a staff. I think we get invigorated by it, and you know, it's we enjoy it. So
what a lovely phone call, Lori.
Yeah,
thank you.
Very nice. Thank you.
Let's go to Rob in North Carolina. Rob, you're on open mic.
Yes, good morning. I just turned radio on about 10 minutes ago, and I heard you speak, and I thought it was Peggy Noonan. Your voice sounds like Peggy Noonan's.
I am not Peggy Noonan. Sorry.
You know, now that Rob says that, your voice does really sound like Peggy Noonan.
Oh, okay.
Oh, excuse me. Her voice sounds like yours.
Oh, there you go. Thank you.
Exactly. And I was thinking, you got to be on the radio more. You're fun to listen to.
Listen, I think filling in on the Trading Post and the Dump Show and the Party Calendar, I think that's enough, don't you?
No, I don't think so. Mike, you should have Ron once a week. Anyway.
No.
I got to ask you about workplace conditions. Do you feel that you're getting paid less as a woman working around there? Are you treated fairly? Because I hate to bring up politics, but it's one of the mantras of Hillary Clinton that there's just too much, I don't know, sexism, bias against women, and they're not getting their fair share. How do you see your male colleagues around there? And you think you're getting a fair shake around the studio?
Yeah, I do think I'm getting a fair shake. I know there's a couple of women over the years that have sort of said this is an old boys' network. They don't value what women say or bring to the table. I don't necessarily agree with that. I've always sort of felt that if you're a strong woman, you voice your opinions to Ken and Eric, and you somehow back your opinions up with facts, or at least back it up with something. I think that management does value you just as much as the men. And I've over the years, I don't know if people realize this, but I've sort of pushed my way around, and I'll get my voice heard somehow in the office.
Gee, I didn't realize
that. You didn't realize that? Yeah. Maybe I've become a little Miss Bossy Pants. I don't know.
We're going to take a break, but when we come back, two questions. Who's your role model, and any regrets that you've had? This is Open Mic. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. We're speaking with Kaya Como, who
is... 45 minutes go?
Yeah, you said we wouldn't be able to fill this, didn't we?
I thought 10 minutes at the most.
It goes fast. We're speaking with Kaya Como, who is here at WDEV. And the reason why we're speaking with Kaya is that this is the 85th anniversary of this radio station. And through the year, I want to bring in various people that work at the station and give us some advice of what they've seen over the years and some of the things that they do and some of the things that they appreciate about what has happened at WDEV, which is a very, very a station that is storied in a lot of history. So wanted to talk...
Steeped in tradition.
There you go. Let's go, because we've got a limited time, Tom, I'm going to take this phone call, and then I got a couple of questions. Let's go to Dick in Wolcott. Dick, you're on Open Mic.
I was curious as to where you would, in your programming, divide announcements, public announcements, to where an announcement might be a commercial announcement. I'm kind of like wondering, you know, whether... how you divide what you might do as announcing of parties as opposed to something that might have a commercial aspect to it.
As far as the party calendar, or do you mean the recorded commercials you hear?
I'm talking about what you might put into a party calendar announcement versus what someone who might be addressing you and asking for an announcement of something that might be more commercial than a party or that kind of an announcement.
Party calendar items, pretty much nonprofit. If the organization is a nonprofit organization, yeah, I'll get it right on there. If there's ever any question about, is it a for-profit business? I'll usually go over that with, I might ask the sales manager real quick what he thinks and then sort of take his advice. A lot of it's done on the, you know, just on the real quick.
Any regrets?
No, not really. No.
Sure.
Yeah. No.
Okay.
No.
In life, no regrets?
No, not really. No. No. You can go on to the next question.
No, I'm going to wait here. We got a minute left. I'm going to wait here until you
ask
give me a regret.
Ask me who my hero or my role model is.
Who's your role model?
My mom.
Okay.
My mom. She's 93. She's in great health. Between her and my husband, they're my role models to keep active, to keep busy, to keep the mind busy.
What a politically correct answer.
Well, it's true.
I want to thank our guest, Mary Beardsworth, from the Executive Director of Vermont Right to Life Committee, and Kaya Como here at WDEV. This is Open Mic on WDEV AM 550, broadcasting from Waterbury, Vermont, 96.1 FM from Warren, 96.5 FM from Barrie, and 101.9 FM from Island Pond. And, of course, we're streaming worldwide at WDEVradio.com. I'm Mike Smith. We'll talk again tomorrow.